Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, we've been talking about it for about a month, right? What is the playoff rotation going to be for the Houston Astros? Well, Dusty Baker told us yesterday what it's going to be. And you know why he told us what it's going to be? Because he said Zach Greinke's pitching out of the bullpen if he pitches in the postseason. This tweet from Mark Berman, who was in the media scrum yesterday before the game. Baker says he's spoken to Greinke about working in the bullpen going forward. Says it was Zach's idea to, quote, try to help us. He's not stretched out to start, so it's a very distinct possibility. During playoff time, you want as many veterans as possible that have been there. So it looks like Zach Greinke's out of the playoff rotation. At least four guys. I mean, unless you want to put Odorizzi in the mix, but I do not. Four guys. Lance McCullers, Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy. There's your four-man playoff rotation.
I'm fine with that, too. I just think it could be a little bit harmful to the team to lose the starting pitcher experience of a pitcher, not a guy that just throws, in Zach Greinke, because you've seen, even in his short time here in Houston, what he's capable of doing when the lights are the brightest, the stage is the biggest. I'm curious now, because he's going to pitch in Sugar Land, how many pitches he throws, how many innings he goes, to see if they can, if they feel like, look, short term, maybe the first round, we can use him out of the pen, but in a 7-game series, we may be able to get him stretched out and get him back to the endurance he had before COVID, to where we can get him back into the rotation in the second round. That's the kind of thing I'm going to keep an eye on, starting with the start tomorrow night in Sugar Land, because that's the kind of thing I think this team truly needs.
I do too. I don't know if Greinke gets valuable innings though out of the bullpen. Like, in what scenario is Greinke going to be pitched in a high leverage spot? The only time I can see Greinke actually being used in the postseason is like if a game goes deep, like if you're playing an extra inning game and Chris Burke hits the walk off home run, something where you're just searching for pitchers, or if a starter leaves the game early and you're trying to bridge it to the bullpen, or if there's a blowout and he's in mop up duty.
Well, essentially, it's Christian Javier times two, right? Because he is a guy that's going to be an innings eater. He is a guy, like you said, that if you're tied and you know you can't go and start burning Graveman and Presley early and even a Stanek, that there's a guy that you could also turn to. He's a guy that if Javier was used, and we know once he's used, you can't go back to him for a couple of days, that he fills that role if there's a high leverage, tight series where it's going back and forth every single night. You might need another innings eater and a guy that's not going to hurt you if you need multiple innings out of him, and he's a guy you feel confident with his experience you can turn to. I think there's a role for him, and the other thing that I think is he's experienced pitching in these games more so than Javier. So that could also factor in. I just worry about him being a guy that has also used, like I always go to with Odorizzi, the ample time to get ready to pitch. And if you're Dusty, you got to start trying to predict the future, going, well, I don't know how this game's going to go after the third or fourth inning, but I'm going to have Greinke start getting loose at about the second or third in case I use him. And then what happens if you don't? You know, is he shot?
I'm trying to think of a time when Dusty Baker would use him where I wouldn't be mad. Like, if it's a tie game in the seventh inning, you don't go to Zach Greinke there. And, like, the difference between Greinke and Javier a little bit to me is Javier's got some swing and miss where Greinke doesn't. Greinke's pitching to a little bit more contact, and Greinke's got better control. So Greinke actually makes more sense if it's like an 8-1 game, because you know Greinke now pitching to contact, pitching with some command, could be better suited for that mop-up role. But is that what you would consider like valuable innings in the postseason? It's not a surprise either, and I think that four-man rotation we laid out, McCullers, Framber, Garcia, Urquidy, I think that those are your four best starters currently pitching right now. What do you make of the Astros playoff rotation? What do you make of Greinke going to the bullpen? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Did you hear Pedro Martinez yesterday? Look, umpires get a lot of grief. Pedro Martinez adding on yesterday on MLB Network.
He's never been called for a balk in his career, Luke Weaver.
Well, the umpires don't know about what they're doing.
Pedro.
I think we're on a delay.
I don't think they were.
Crossed. It'll clean that up for the rear. That was fun.
I just love that Pedro so much because he basically had a zero Fs given mentality as a pitcher. He carried it over to the booth. And the fact that he loves it, he's on cable. You know what? And a lot of times, look, at TNT gets away with a lot of that stuff too with Charles sometimes and the guys. I think it was fantastic. I think the guys knew it. I think the fact it's like having Vernon Maxwell on the radio. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get, but one thing you're guaranteed of is that Dell's going to be playing Space Invaders with the dump button because from time to time these things happen. The fact that that was just pure raw emotion coming from Pedro's heart, I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I think Pedro's great television. I think he's one of the best ones that does it in terms of MLB like analyst work. Did you see that whenever he was on Family Feud a few years ago? And Steve Harvey asked him, the question was, the survey says or whatever, name a word that rhymes with Miami. Or no, name a word that rhymes with my tummy. With tummy. And Pedro Martinez said, Miami. And everybody lost it. Everybody lost their minds. I love Pedro Martinez. I think he's awesome on television. Maybe a Martinez cast for the playoffs might be something that would be pretty fun. Going around Major League Baseball last night, did you happen to see Joe Kelly throw a little chin music at Jake Mariznick last night? Eighth inning, 0-2 count, two outs, nobody on base. And Joe Kelly drilled him high and tight?
I tweeted this. I tweeted this. The minute I saw it, going, okay, timeout. This little guy that weighs about as much as his fastball goes miles per hour wise has a weapon in his arm that he's allowed to use, and no one's allowed to fight back. I'd like to see that scrawny 98-pound when wet wuss take someone on coming out to the mound after do that little that face he gave to Correa with his pouty lip and everything while someone's throwing a haymaker right hook right to his freaking jawbone. Because the fact of the matter is, out on the streets, in a dark alley, somewhere where he doesn't have Major League Baseball protecting his ass, someone would have whooped his ass the first time, let alone last night. And if he still wants to be everybody's hero, what he thinks everybody's forgotten is he was a part of the Red Sox team that cheated too. So don't just sit there and make the Astros the only villain and you be the hero that everyone needs and be able to throw at these guys, especially throwing near their dome piece, where you can not only end a guy's career, you can significantly alter their life. If you want to put one in his back pocket, if you want to put one between the numbers, still a P move, but at the same time, it's a little bit more acceptable. The fact that you went upstairs and buzzed the tower again with 98, and you know if you had to fight your way out of a ring once you did that, you would never even consider it, makes you the softest man in baseball.
So you think he did it on purpose?
Absolutely.
There was some conversation going around whether or not he did it on purpose, and I believe at the very minimum, best case scenario, if you're like a Joe Kelly truther, was that he was trying to go high and tight, get Mariznick off of his plate on an 0-2 count, and then now you're in a 1-2 position where Mariznick's feeling a little bit uncomfortable. There's no doubt in my mind that Joe Kelly was going high and tight on purpose. I'm not 100% sure he meant to hit him. Like, I think Kelly would have liked if Mariznick got out of the way of that fastball high and tight, but certainly something, he was sending a message with that pitch.
But Jeremy, if it was anybody else, I'd see your logic. If it's a guy whose track record said he's already going to be petty little bitch boy and he did it once already and then tried to back it up with his bumping of his gums to try and say why he was the freaking new sheriff in town. That's why I completely throw any kind of it just got away from him and he wasn't really intending to do that out the window. If it was someone that was just trying to get control and pitch on the inside part of the plate in a tight game, I get it. It's Joe Kelly. It's Joe Kelly doing what Joe Kelly does, and I'd really like to see someone do what we'd all like to see someone do to him and whoop his ass.
I think he did it on purpose, too. I think best case scenario, though, if you're a Kelly truther, is he was just trying to send a message going high and tight and setting it up, but I do think that he hit him, and I think a couple of things that kind of work against that argument against Joe Kelly was, one, if you go back and watch it, Joe Kelly, as soon as that ball hit Mariznick, he was like, oh, well, no problem, give me a new ball. Like, he wasn't upset with himself at all that he went high and tight and hit a guy on an 0-2 count. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of the mentality of Joe Kelly in that spot. If you go back and look where the catcher was setting up, too, he was setting up inside, but he was setting up low. Like, he was below the zone. And what? Look at this. Anybody who's played baseball for a second in their lives know that an 0-2 count, you're probably not going to have a pitch in the zone, right? So you're already going to go out of the zone. The catcher's setting up low and in, yet you missed that spot by 6 feet right at Mariznick's nose. So, yeah, I'm with you. Joe Kelly was trying to send a message to Jake Mariznick yesterday. Like, he's gotten popular because he hit Carlos Correa, and in your words, like, he's the new sheriff in town. This was Joe Kelly trying to be relevant again, trying to stir everything up again, saying, yeah, look at me. I'm the guy that's going to hit former Astros because I'm the tough guy that's going to police the game like I should.
Yeah, that bothers me the most, because rest your reputation and your popularity on your merits of being able to get guys out. You have a 98-plus mile-an-hour fastball. If you can do anything with it at all, that's all you need. But because you just want to be the hero that everybody, you know, uses on the internet as their guy, and maybe you make a couple of T-shirts out of the deal, then you do stupid, petty BS like this, and you deserve to pay the consequences. You did it once, you got away with it. You do something like this again with a guy that's far removed from Houston and the Astros, just to kind of make people say, you know what, never forget, I'm Joe Kelly and I don't. Guess what? I'd like to have someone else, maybe another ex-Astro, come along somewhere else, and whether they stumble upon him when he's staying in their city. What if Evan Gattis saw him walking down the street and he came out and said, you got anything to say to me, Joe? Because yeah. I'll pound your ass right here in the middle of the freaking Four Seasons Hotel. How about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if Mariznick made a little trip to the mound after he got hit in that game yesterday. Meanwhile, though, the Cardinals, they stay red hot. They win their 17th game in a row, clinch the wild card berth. I'm hoping the Cardinals end the Dodgers season prematurely. I'd love for the Dodgers to win 100-plus games, and they get ousted in the wild card round against St. Louis.
I'm with you for that 150%. Look, it's the best team money can buy, and they keep pointing fingers at everybody else. And every time something goes wrong, instead of trying to cure it internally or do other things, they go out and they pull off trades to get more hyper-expensive guys that most other teams can't afford. And they get two of them. You know, they add not only one, but they add two. And so now they continue to look like a team that everybody, you know, in L.A. loves to love, but that everybody else loves to hate, just like the Yankees. And I'd love to see them spend all that money and put all that time and effort into pointing fingers at the Astros as to why they didn't win more, and then get a one-and-done scenario in the playoffs. It would be, even if it's the Cardinals, who I'm not a big fan of, but if the Cardinals can oust the Dodgers, more power to them.
Yeah, worth it in this case. Dodgers have 101 wins. They're 101-56. They've won 7 of their last 10. They've won back-to-back games, yet they're not gaining any ground. San Francisco's 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 4 games in a row. 2-game lead in the NL West. I'm hoping the Giants can win that division and force the Dodgers into that do-or-die wild card game. Was Joe Kelly throwing at Jake Mariznick last night? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, Texans potential. What is it? Does it exist? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Joel, we'll talk about Fitz Roofing.
Hey, I want to tell you about Fitz Roofing right about now. It's the only place that I would recommend in the city of Houston if you need anything done. You need a roof repair on your business and or your house. You want a new roof on your business or your house. You want to do some work repairs around the house. You want a yard in your backyard. You want to put a fence around it. Look, there's only one place to call. It's Fitz Roofing. And the best thing is when you call Fitz Roofing at 832-521-3001, they do a free no obligation inspection of the work that you need done, and it costs you absolutely nothing. They come to you and they tell you what they can do. And then they go back on their way, finishing the rest of their route, taking care of the rest of their jobs. You want them to come back, you make that appointment, get the process started. You're going to find out the best customer service in the business before, during, and after the sale, best warranties, best products, and the best ratings too. Corey is not only the owner and president of the company, Corey's the vice president of the Houston Area Roofers Association, which means he is known and respected by every one of his peers, and that's another reason why you go to Fitz. Check out FITZRoofing.com, or better yet, call him 832-521-3001. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texans potential, what is it? Does it exist? Mark Ingram, talking to the media, says that he signed with the Texans because he saw potential in the franchise. Like, what do you think was going through Ingram's mind in the offseason? Look, he wasn't a free agent that was highly sought after. He wasn't this big target for a lot of teams. I think that the Texans were one of, if very few teams that were interested in Mark Ingram. So do you believe him whenever he says that, you know, he signed with the Texans because of the potential that he saw in this organization?
You know what he saw? A potential with an organization that actually was interested in him. Because at this point, basically, at that where Mark Ingram was in his career, he's excited and geeked about having the potential to make a roster and make a paycheck one more time without having to find a real job. And the Texans were the only team that really went out and did that. That also probably guaranteed him he'd get playing time. And so I think that he's going to say all the right things now, because when he was left with his back against the wall wondering if he was done playing NFL football, there was at least one franchise that was willing to not only say we're interested, but if you come play for us, we're going to have a spot for you to get some carries and prove that you still belong. And that's why he jumped on it. So it's not surprising to me you hear a guy like Mark Ingram say that. And he's a very loyal guy. And we've seen this from Lamar Jackson and even with his time with the Saints, that, you know what, if you put a lot of trust in him and you back him, he's going to back you the exact same way, if not more. And so I credit him for going out and backing his organization that way.
Yeah, I think he's a really good teammate. I think he's loyal to the team that that he's playing for. Mark Lane had this in Texans Wire, and he, quote, said that, I know there's good people in the organization, good people on the team. I know Cooks, just being able to come here, being able to have the opportunity to play this game that I love, to have the opportunity to be able to run the ball, be able to have the opportunity to put my best foot forward to help my team win games. And look, I think that whenever you hear the words like, I know there's good people in the organization, I think you're going to see some Texans fans start to scratch their head whenever you hear quotes like that. Because what's the black cloud in the room for Texans fans when it comes to the organization? It's Jack Easterby, right? So you hear good people in the organization, good people on the team. And I think a lot of Texans fans are going to kind of take that sarcastically almost, because they don't agree whenever Ingram says something like that.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And I think that, look, we talk about the escapability. We talk about the Astros being able to escape all of the cheater's reputation and all of the hatred if they win the World Series this year. The only way that the Texans are going to do similar things and get people to stop looking at this, and we heard John Clayton yesterday, we've talked to some of the other national writers that say, no, they're still a clown show. Their reputation is still pretty embarrassing across the NFL. There's a reason for that, and you touched on it. Aside from trying to be Patriot South, it's Jack Easterby. And the fact that, like we continue to say, you went out and hired a search firm to find your next general manager. And because the one guy, there was no one on there that would have saved Jack Easterby's job, Jack Easterby got involved late, went and got a guy that would, got him hired, and he became the vice president of something in football operations that he's never done before so that he could stay with the organization. Until Jack goes, you cannot start the reset of the reputation of the Houston Texans. As long as Jack Easterby is a member of this franchise, and to that matter, it's also extended to Cal McNair, because Cal McNair has been a bumbling idiot of complete missteps too. You're not going to reset the ownership group, but if you want to reset the narrative about the overall perception of your franchise, Jack's got to go.
They can win with them there, though, can't they?
Yeah.
Can they win with Jack there? Of course, Cal is the owner. I still believe that they can win there. And if, like, you look at the potential of the Texans, right now there's not great potential in this team because they have one of the worst rosters in the NFL. I think that they play hard. I think for the most part that they are well coached, and I think they're not embarrassing themselves like a lot of people thought that they would at the start of the season. So give them credit for that. I can't remember who we had on that said, like, the Texans are overachieving at this point. Yet they're 1-2, and I don't think they're going to win more than, like, 4 or 5 games. It is who they are because the roster is not very good. I think when you start to see potential in this franchise, I guess if you're trying to be optimistic about it, the potential can be Nick Caserio. You finally have a football guy in charge, making the decisions with football personnel. He's in charge of the 53. He's a willing-dealing son of a gun. It looks like, for the most part, he knows what he's doing. He's not Bill O'Brien. Very low bar, right? And, like, I've been critical of him, but even the things that I'm critical about are nitpicky things, like trading a 6th-rounder for Ryan Finley and then cutting Ryan Finley. That doesn't carry a lot of significance. Well, we're really going to judge Nick Caserio's going forward, what he does with 1st- and 2nd-round picks, how he handles the Deshaun Watson situation, which I think so far so good. I don't want him to trade him for pennies on the dollar. So I think you do have a good football mind there, and that is the potential in the Texans. But in terms of, like, long-term potential, it's not here yet until you start to really believe in the draft picks that Nick Caserio selects.
And he's also got to handle the draft well, because as we said in his first draft, he didn't look like a guy that was in complete control and was making the right decisions for this franchise. He's got to get his feet wet. He's got to put that behind him. He's got to get better at that. But I ask you the question, if you're Nick Caserio and you have a similar situation with DeAndre Hopkins, do you think that Nick Caserio would trade DeAndre Hopkins?
No.
I think that's progress in itself.
And if he
does,
he gets a lot more.
And I agree with that, too. But I think that more so to your first answer, it now becomes, this is where Cal needs to stay out of it and take his best friend Jack Easterby and make sure he does, too. Because now you have a true football mind, experienced as a general manager type personnel guy, to make those kind of decisions, as opposed to an emotional coach, egotistical as all get out in his first go-round as GM, that's going to make knee-jerk decisions based on who hurt his feelings and who's not doing things the O'Brien way off the field. I think that's where it starts and ends. The minute that you let Nick Caserio make those kind of decisions and he doesn't have the interference of a Jack Easterby and he doesn't have to worry about an owner that might decline or veto any of the moves I'm trying to make, now you can make significant strides as a franchise. I think that will help a great deal. I think that's where Cal needs to stay status quo so that he doesn't suddenly want to start getting involved, and then maybe he wants Jack involved, and then it delays or screws up the process.
See, this is where, like, I want to have the thought where the Texans have potential. I want to believe in Nick Caserio to be the man that gets this team back into the postseason and back at the top of the AFC South. And to your point, the things that bother me is, like, those guys need to get out of the way. Cal needs to just go being an owner and playing video games or whatever he does. Easterby needs to do his thing, but get out of the way of the football team. So whenever I see things, and maybe it's an overreaction on my part, but whenever I see Jack Easterby in the middle of the locker room handing out game balls, that bothers me because it shows me, to me, it's symbolism of him not getting out of the way. Whenever I see him out running around before practice and high-fiving all of the players, to me, that symbolizes Easterby not getting out of the way. So whenever I see that, it's just like they're rubbing it in all of the Texan fans' faces that, look, you couldn't get rid of me, and here I am. Like, if they were just to get out of the public's view, you know, hang out behind closed doors where nobody could see you, I think people could move on. I think people could forget. I think people could buy into Nick Caserio and who the Houston Texans are. But when they rub it in your face and Easterby's all around the place and you see him all the time, that's whenever it ticks off Houston Texans fans.
Sure it does. But I think that, of course, if you're the ass clown that thinks that it's a dumb question to ask you about whether Nick Caserio would make that trade or not, it's not because it's Nick Caserio versus Bill O'Brien as much as it's, you trust a football mind to make the right decisions for a franchise and realize the owner's not going to get involved and veto it. Because any smart owner that is in charge of the franchise, who, by the way, is still not going anywhere, is the owner that steps up and goes, you know what? You might have bad blood with D-Hop. You might not like him very much, like his baby mamas, like the fact he doesn't practice a whole lot. He's too damn good to be given away at any price, let alone what you're trying to get for him. I'm saying no. The fact that Bill O'Brien had no one to report to, no one looking over his shoulder, and that the franchise trusted him to make that move is the point that I'm trying to make. At least you have a guy now that when moves need to be made, whether Cal's involved or not, and you hope he's not, he's going to make the smart football decision for the franchise, which we haven't had for how many years since Bill O'Brien's been here. The only X factor is, like you mentioned, when will Jack start meddling? When will Jack start saying, hey, I got you the gig. I want to be involved in this too. Because you don't need too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's kind of my stance too. And look, like, you can compare the Hopkins situation to, like, the Vikings situation where they traded Diggs to Buffalo for a first rounder. Like, both of those receivers are top-tier receivers in the NFL. I put Hopkins in front of Diggs. So, like, you could make the argument that that type of move in the NFL, whenever you have a receiver who's in his 30s, who wants a new contract, and you don't want to pay him that contract, you can make sense of making that type of trade. But if you're not getting back a very good return, that's whenever you're going to scrutinize it even more and more and more. Like, I think the Vikings got out of that Diggs trade pretty good. Like, you get a first-rounder return, you draft Justin Jefferson. Like, they didn't miss a beat. Diggs is still a very good player. So I think you can actually make sense of trading a DeAndre Hopkins, but then whenever you see what you got back, it's embarrassing. Whenever you have a talent like Jadeveon Clowney, I know he's been a bust and hasn't lived up to potential, but how you handled the Clowney situation, and I know Gain was still around for some of that, but how you handled that, and then the return you got back for Jadeveon Clowney, overpaying for Laremy Tunsil. Like, and I know that's all O'Brien's stuff, but people still, you know, compare Easterby. Like,
Nick,
it's synonymous.
Kaimi Fairbairn. Yeah. The list is endless of how many guys he made top six and paid in their position that didn't perform like it.
Yep.
The question then becomes, too, Jeremy, because it's easier then for the 409 area code, that's my Siskel and Ebert, to try and find sense in all this, is any other general manager in the league going to make the trade for DeAndre Hopkins? One, at all, and two, to get what you got back?
No.
I mean, not anybody with football experience. From a general manager's perspective, which now you have, which you didn't have for years.
I think if you got back what you got for Stephon Diggs, I think it's something that you would still be upset about, but yes, you could kind of understand it as well. But the return that you got back, especially when one of those guys is like your third running back and making too much money and looks terrible and didn't get back significant draft pick compensation, just dumb. And I think Easterby's synonymous with that. So seeing Easterby around rubs everybody the wrong way. Texan fans, what do you think of when you see Jack Easterby handing out game balls, giving high fives to teammates as they're stretching? And what do you think the Texans' potential is? 713-780-3776.
You know, I didn't really notice it until you pointed it out, and now you're so right. When they were giving out that game ball after week one, and Easterby kept trying to grab onto the elbow and arm of Caserio
to
yank him into the front, and Caserio wouldn't go, says so much about both guys. Good for Caserio to not want to steal the thunder from Cully on his first victory and let the team celebrate. And also, what kind of toolbox is Jack Easterby to try and throw his guy into the middle of all of this to look like he had a part in it?
Tension hog. I mean, it screams who Jack Easterby is. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, we go around the NFL. Cameras caught an intimate moment between Tom Brady and Jalen Ramsey. Much, much more from around the league. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jay Glazer's retweeting his Deshaun Watson news over the weekend. And you know, the Twitter lingo, in case you missed it, he wants everybody to know that the Texans are more open to trading Deshaun Watson. This was the news that came out on Sunday. The Inside Scoop with Jay Glazer.
You did it again.
I didn't do it again. Jay Glazer did it.
Doesn't make any difference. We should have like a, what do they call it, kangaroo court.
Yeah,
kangaroo and every court. Time you force DeAndre, or I mean the Deshaun Watson conversation.
It wasn't forced on Monday.
Right, on Monday. And we basically said then, enough is enough.
It's
I continue
news.
To harp on, we should not continue to beat this drum anymore. And yet here you come with a full kit, pounding out a drum solo by bringing it back up again. What, here's the thing that bothers me more than that. I like Jay Glazer. Does he really need to keep going and playing this card?
See, I think he's just doing good for an agent. I really do. I think he's scratching somebody's back.
Hasn't that already been done? He got it on national TV 2 weeks in a row. Wasn't that enough?
Yeah, but you know, like whoever's running Jay Glazer's social media account needs to get the I mean, look, it's got 110 retweets. It's got 158 likes, and it was only like 45 minutes ago. So
it's annoying.
He also says, keep your eyes on this situation. Hashtag scoopage. Hashtag NFL. Hashtag Texans. Hashtag actually added NFL on Fox.
Hashtag get a new thing to talk about. How about that? How about hashtag turn the page? Can we do that?
Okay, but let's put yourself in Jake Glazer's shoes. Why would you if you're getting 112 retweets and 166 likes? I mean, impressions. That's
turn the page.
let me just tell you something, Jeremy. Because you asked the question, why? Well, because he could give you an update on Richard Sherman signing with the Buccaneers and get the same exact reaction.
Did you see Richard Sherman, by the way? He started a podcast yesterday.
Yeah, so he could make his own announcement.
Yeah. He said, listen to my podcast. This is where you'll find the news on where I'm signing. And he ended up signing with the Tampa Bay Bucks. He got a Danny Amendola deal, $2.25 million for 1 year.
You know what? There are a lot of teams that should have taken a look at him, including the Green Bay Packers. And here's another thing, in case you missed it. Another guy that's been very, very good and paid by, you know, in this case, bad teams. Jamie Collins, who was a stud for the Patriots, who took all the money to follow Matt Patricia to the Lions, now with new coach Dan Campbell, has been told, we're going younger. We're going to go in a different direction. They tried to trade him. They couldn't. He's a free agent, and all of his money for this year is guaranteed by the Lions. Some team can get him on the very cheap, and he can make an immediate impact. I'm talking to you, Brian Gutekunst. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers tells you to do it or not to be the motivation you need. Get on the damn phone and get a guy that can make your defense better. He's not washed up. I saw him play against the Packers 2 weeks ago. He's still got plenty. Go get that guy if you are a contending team and get your defense even better. Even if you're the Cowboys. As good as the Cowboys have been, you know that Vander Esch can't stay healthy. You know that they've always had issues staying healthy by midseason on the defense. Go look at that guy as a veteran, not only in the locker room, but a guy that gives you depth and gives you potential to actually avoid having an injury take you down on the defensive side of the football.
Probably more of a 3-4 linebacker, so it's probably a system fit. Former team New England, would they be kicking the tires? Would Brian Flores in Miami be perhaps kicking the tires on Jamie Collins? Jamie Collins to Miami, is that something that could happen?
I mean, sure, because he's a free agent, there's money available, but as far as an actual thing, he's been available before and the Dolphins have passed. The Dolphins don't like paying for street free agents, really. I mean, look, if they wanted to pay for anybody, they should be paying for offensive line help. I don't foresee it. They just gave Baker a big deal. I guess since it could be, a minimum deal?
Yeah, they could probably bring him in on the minimum. So maybe I could see him wanting to, go somewhere that has that Patriot-style defense, 3-4-style defense, wherever he made his fame with New England. NFL Films, they always do such a great job of having everybody mic'd up and then playing some of the best moments on their NFL film show every Tuesday. They tweet out a few of them. One of the best moments over the weekend, after the L.A. Rams beat the Tampa Bay Bucks, you had one of the better defensive players in the league, Jalen Ramsey, go up to maybe the greatest NFL football player of all time, Tom Brady, and those two shared a moment on the field together.
Inches.
Gotta get rid of that thing.
Hey, man.
Take care.
I respect you so much.
Take care, man.
I just love playing against you, man.
Yeah.
It's an honor, man. Thank you. I appreciate you.
I get it.
That was sweet. That was sweet right there, right, between Ramsey and Brady?
It was hard for me to make out all of the convo. It did seem like Jalen had a lot he wanted to keep saying, and Tom was basically like, we just got our ass kicked. Yeah. I kind of just want to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, it did sound a little bit like that, but it was kind of cool seeing Tom Brady, and Jalen Ramsey, kind of just the mutual respect that they have for one another. The players of the week announced by the NFL, Josh Allen. How about a time for him to get hot, right? The Texans' opponent on Sunday, Josh Allen named the AFC Offensive Player of the Week, accounted for 5 touchdowns, 358 yards. Like, he did that against a Washington football team defense that we think's at least pretty good. Maybe they took advantage of an easy schedule last year to make the defense look better. But I can promise you the football team's defense is better than the Texans' defense. And I'm pretty interested to see what Josh Allen's going to do to the Texans on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm glad you're interested in it. You're also interested in Team Europe, so you're not exactly a loyal guy to your team.
I bet Team Europe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you'll bet the Bills, too.
But I'm supposed to be embracing the suck, aren't I?
Yes, you are, but that's just a loss. That doesn't mean, you're curious to see if Josh Allen's just going to actually rip him a new one. I look at it and say, this is the Josh Allen we expected all along. The fact that, for whatever the reason, whether I said he might have bought into the clippings too much, that he thought he was an MVP candidate and tried to do too much, or just got, tried to get too quick of a start to the season and it caught him trying to be a superhero. He has enough talent around him, or if he just does what he's supposed to do and does his job, he's going to look great because the team is going to win a ton of games, and there's a game that they should not lose coming up on Sunday against the Texans. The Texans could have 2 weeks to prepare for this game. It's not going to make that big of a difference because we've talked about the depth on both sides of the football and the talent that the Bills have. You talked about, in terms of when we were talking about the Hopkins trade, the fact that Diggs was a great addition to this ball club, and now, on top of that, you add Emmanuel Sanders to go with the Cole Beasleys and the other guys that they have on the offensive side of the ball for Josh Allen to take advantage of, and a decent, far be it unknown, people don't know a whole lot about the Bills running game, but they run the football too. The Bills are a built for Super Bowl caliber team that have bigger fish to fry and aspirations focused on the Chiefs, the Browns, and winning the AFC. It's just another game on the schedule to them. And for the Texans, it should be an astronomical challenge to try and do what you did against the Browns and take it a step further and get people to believe, even if we embrace the suck by the final result, we hung in the game and showed that we've got a lot going for us positively going forward to the future.
I sat the bench behind Cole Beasley's cousin in high school. He was the starting second baseman. I was the backup second baseman.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that something you're going to put in your bio or on your gravestone?
I played baseball with Cole Beasley's cousin. Probably on my gravestone. I think that's going to be right there with right there, second or third sitting.
Which means you're going to make it big at some point with your play-by-play career, so that you'll have enough money to have a gravestone that big to be able to write that paragraph.
That's going to be the only thing that's on my gravestone.
Oh.
Nothing else. Just that. I sat the bench
behind
Cole
Beasley's cousin.
Not
beloved husband that wouldn't look at pictures of other women?
Probably, if you ask my wife, it wouldn't say that.
Okay.
Myles Garrett, defensive player of the week, 4.5 sacks. Poor Justin Fields. Garrett winning the Defensive Player of the Week in the AFC. Justin Tucker, how could he not? Greatest kicker of all time. Yep. Winning the AFC Player of the Week, special teams on the NFC side, your guy, Mason Crosby, the special teams player of the week, Byron Murphy for Arizona. He had two picks in the game for the Cardinals against Jacksonville, poor Trevor Lawrence. He was the defensive player of the week in the NFC. And then my guy, Matthew Stafford, the AFC Player of the Week, four touchdowns.
Your guy?
Absolutely. I've been on the LA Rams Matthew Stafford train all year long, baby.
Anybody else heard that? Believe that?
Have I not?
I don't think I've heard that.
Ever since week one, I said the Rams were the most impressive team to me this week. And I know that they didn't win in convincing fashion against Chicago, but I loved the connection between Stafford and Sean
McVay. I don't know if I have amnesia or am I the only one that doesn't remember that?
I absolutely said that.
I don't remember.
Thank you.
Well, y'all are both wrong. Appreciate that's okay. It. Check the tape.
Oh, we will. Dell's got plenty of it, and it stays around for a while, so you got to be careful about that. I've already learned my lesson again. But no, you know what? Look, I said all when the trade was made. People are looking at Matt Stafford as a guy that was overpaid and underperformed. He just had a really bad team around him. He's been a really, really good quarterback. He gets scrutinized and penalized, I guess, because he was at one point the highest paid player in the game. Wasn't his fault his contract came available at the time when, you know, the money was what it was, and he got paid like the best player in the game. He didn't ask for that. He's not going to turn it down. But he's shown with weapons around him and a defense that's going to keep his team in the game, he could do a lot of special things, and he's got a big-time arm, and he's the right fit for that entire team, which figured out it wasn't going anywhere where it wanted to go with Jared Goff as the quarterback and pulled off a move to get better. It's hard for a team. It's one thing to say a team wants to do something to improve their team at a certain position. It's another thing to be able to do it and do it with a guy that's better than the guy you gave up. And the fact that the Rams were able to do that, I'm with you in the fact that the top two teams in the NFL, in my opinion, right now are the teams that played last week. It's Tampa and it's the Rams. Chiefs can get right, but their record is wrong right now to be able to be in that conversation.
Yeah. Rams did give us some pretty good draft capital to bring in Stafford. Poncho on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, saying, is Stafford from Europe? Haha, I get it. Cole Beasley, maybe the newest edition of the Killer Bees. And our guy, Eric the Dog Walker, texted in, saying that the best thing about Nick Caserio, he knows that Jack Easterby is not a football guy. So is that the best attribute for Caserio, is that he knows that Easterby is not a football guy? I certainly hope so.
I hear what Eric the Dog Walker is saying, but what I would like to add to that is, but if he knows that he's the guy that got me the job, and he's a loyal guy, more so than most of the Patriots guys, I'd be a little bit of concerned.
Yeah, that's a good point. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, number to call, number to text. We're on Twitch at twitch.tv/ESPN975, and on Twitter, he's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Is Clemson's dynasty done? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, I want to tell you about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. As a matter of fact, you know what? I had several friends in the last 24 hours hit me up on texts, call me, and hit me up on social media to say, what's the name of that Italian restaurant you keep talking about? I got to go try it out. I said, Frankie's Italian Kitchen, man. You got to go try it out because it is the best Italian food. Especially if you are going to be in the Katy area, the Fulshear area, the Richmond area, the Sugarland area. You go there once, you're going to be there multiple times. You know why? Because not only do you leave feeling full, so does your wallet, because it doesn't drain you to take your whole family there and feed them and know that you get great food. You leave feeling satisfied, and you don't have to pay a ton because the prices are affordable. Not only that, Chris Smith, the owner, is also the chef that prepares the food, and he guarantees you it's going to be fresh every single time. The produce is fresh. The Italian sausage comes from College Station. The cheese comes from Wisconsin. And every dish on the menu is fresh, it's made right, and it's going to taste delicious. From their wings and their pizza is all world. It used to be in the name of the place, but they wanted to let you know there was so much more than just pizza that they extended it to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. You want to see the menu? Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. Take it from me. I've tried almost everything on the menu. Everything is delicious. Everything's going to have you coming back for more. And everything's going to have you telling your friends the way I tell mine that if you want great Italian food, it's the only place you need to go. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's great food. Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Dabo's dynasty is done. Ooh. I do not like anything I see there. I respect what Heather has just got through saying, but I strongly and vehemently disagree. They've lost one coach a couple of years ago to USF. I think that was a big loss. This is a staff that has always been together, but I think it's getting stale. Yes, recruiting is still good, but will it be elite after what we just got through watching Greeny? It just doesn't look like Clemson is part of the cool kids anymore, and I think they're going to pay for it in recruiting, and they play in a terrible league, which will hurt them even more.
Hot take by Feinbaum. I like that line, by the way. I'm going to start using that on you. I respect your take. I just strongly disagree. But how about what Feinbaum said, that Clemson's dynasty is over. Dabo's dynasty is done.
Dell said the same thing because he was going to get him on the show for us by the end of the week so he could talk about it with us. I think that...
All right, keep playing games.
I think, you know, you get in here too, college football expert guy. I believe him. I have serious doubts about the long-term stability of the Clemson program now that Trevor Lawrence is gone because of how bad DJ has played this year. He was supposed to be the next guy to just carry the torch and keep it going. And we talk about how many times schools get multiple five-star quarterbacks, but they think they're picking the right one. The other guys, rightfully so, go other places so that they can play. And then when they find out they got the wrong one, it not only screws them in the short term, but it also has already sent a message about guys considering going there in the future and how they might be treated and how it might work out. What do you got, Dell?
The Clemson dynasty done?
I talked about this a couple weeks ago on the 2 Deep, which you can hear on Sports Night Radio on Saturdays.
Myself,
5 to 8 Central. I'm without shame, certainly. There is a bit of a brain drain at Clemson, particularly on that offensive side of the ball. Dabo does a lot of in-house promotion, like, oh, you're a grad assistant, I'll move you to an analyst. Oh, now we got an opening, I'll move you to a position coach. Not a lot of new ideas. Paul Feinbaum mentioned Jeff Scott, who's now the head coach at USF. Tony Elliott was deemed the play caller. Apparently, he was always a play caller. But there's just a lack of ingenuity. And if you look at their roster, they don't have the Travis Etienne, the guy who the last 3 years, when they needed a big play, they just hand the ball off to him, dump it off to him on a screen. He would go break a tackle or two and go get you 20 yards on 3rd and 8 and a drive would continue. Or Trevor Lawrence would use his legs. And there is no birthright to being an elite team for 10 years. That's Saban's thing. What is the gestation period for a dynasty? I mean, if you don't have your transcendent quarterback, which Mac Brown had at Texas and Dabo had it 2 times, just like Mac did at Clemson with Deshaun and then a break with Kelly Bryant, then Trevor Lawrence, the dynasty should probably last 6 to 7 years. I mean, you can still be a good program after that, but after 5 or 6 years, things kind of start to dissipate.
Do you think it changes, Dell, if he goes out of that system family and gets like the Saban Bill O'Brien version and goes to get like a noticeable name? Not saying that they're a greatest offensive coordinator or offensive mind, but say, let's just hypothetically, he goes out and gets Jason Garrett after he gets dumped, rightfully so, by the Giants, but he gets an NFL name that has some clout to it to be his offensive coordinator.
Well, think about this. When Clemson was on their rise, they finally made an Orange Bowl, and they got destroyed by West Virginia 70-33, maybe Dana Holgerson's biggest win of his career in an Orange Bowl. Sorry about that, Jeremy. Hasn't happened here yet, but maybe it will. And then he went and got Brent Venables because the defense wasn't good enough. He had hired Chad Morris the previous season, offseason, so he got his offensive guy. He went and got his defensive guy. So he started this by going to get guys from the outside. Once he got established, it was promote from within, promote from within. Now the defensive side has still stayed at a high level. But offensively, I don't think he would ever fire Tony Elliott. Tony Elliott has had opportunities to go other places. He was looking for the right spot. Maybe he says, I don't think it happens this offseason. Maybe Dabo quietly goes, hey, go take a job someplace. So it doesn't look like I fired you, but maybe we need to upgrade. Because it's different ideas need to be had there.
Chad Morris, the head coach at Allen High School, by the way, so he's probably attainable to bring back to Clemson. Look, Clemson's having a down year, and Feinbaum's always quick to bang on anybody who's not in the SEC. I'm not going to let one down year for Clemson all of a sudden be the reason that they're not going to be great going forward. To me, they're still the class of the ACC going forward. They still have the best recruiting grounds in the ACC.
But that's where I was going to go. They got to continue to do it. Now with a down year, with question marks suddenly circling around a program that was otherwise rock solid – does that affect five-star guys at quarterback and other positions that we're thinking about Clemson?
Well, think about Clemson has a particular way of recruiting. They don't recruit everyone that's a high talent that would want to go there. You have to fit the Clemson standard, and because of how good they've been, and they rarely ever miss on prospects, they've been allowed to do this where they can be very fine in their approach. If you don't have the personality to fit Clemson, we won't recruit you. For example, we're talking about the coach staff. If you go look at their official site, the coaching staff is posed around Howard's Rock, which is what the players touch when they go down. You know who else is there? Their entire families. I don't think there's another school who does that where they have family pictures as the profile picture for the coaches. So that's the mindset. And Dabo's been fortunate; he doesn't take transfers. You're not a Clemson guy. You're never gonna be a Clemson guy because they've been able to win. Look, I'm a fan of Miami. I saw their down. I saw their climb up and their downturn. The recruiting will be fine for the next 2 to 3 years because it's that paw on the helmet will still mean something. It'll just be a question of Dabo will adapt and go, you know what? I've positioned my program different from Alabama, but the one guy who continues to be great a decade in is Saban. Maybe I got to refine my approach and go, you know what, Tony Elliott, go take another job.
Let me ask you a question. Somebody else. Is the Easterby factor in there too then? Because Clemson, also known as Dabo, being a Bible guy, being a Jesus guy, being a guy that's part of the Clemson culture that he likes to go to. Does that factor in, as you're talking about, with recruits too?
I think it helps because you're talking to Southern kids with their Southern moms and Southern dads, and it fits the profile. That's a place. Family, every time, like Clemson does a great job of their marketing. Every time new recruits come in on their official YouTube channel, the kids will talk about why they're there, and a lot of it's the family environment. And you see the parents talking. It's about the Christian attitude of the program. I think that's a good place for them. I think they're just going to have to adapt in their hiring practices when it comes to it. And Brent, I think you should have noticed the Clemson thing might have taken a downturn when Brent Venables was putting his two kids in the two deep.
Yeah.
His kid was the starting safety in a playoff game, and his other kid, the linebacker,
got thrown out.
Yeah, well, that was Skalski, but his other kid.
No, once he got thrown out, did his kid have to fill in?
Yeah, both kids play a lot. You might think to yourself, hey, Dabo, do you think Nick Saban would allow his rotating band of defensive coordinators to allow their kids to be in the 2D? Probably not. So that should have been your first warning sign that maybe Clemson's fallen off a little bit. A
little nepotism there. I think the biggest factor for veteran coaches, like why they fall off the cliff, is because of what Dell's saying, that they keep a lot of assistants that they feel loyal to as opposed to actually being up to the standard of being a top five team, you know, in the country, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. 713-780-ESPN. Do you think the Clemson dynasty is dying, or is this just a bad year? Another coach that kind of got banged yesterday on ESPN, Mike Wilbon on PTI. Boy, he does not like Lane Kiffin.
The answer is Alabama because of Lane Kiffin. There's nothing to be proud of if you're a college footballer or any other sport, but Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin's a clown. Lane Kiffin has been an embarrassment at multiple stops. I mean, nobody's going to say, yeah, I want Lane Kiffin right here on the logo representing me. The answer's Alabama, Tony. Lane Kiffin's a cute little story for guys like us who have to talk about sports every day, and we can come in Monday and say, ha, 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 Lane Kiffin. Once again, Lane Kiffin equals embarrassment at some point wherever he is. Alabama.
He hasn't been. Wilbon going scorched earth on Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin, he quote tweeted this on Twitter. He put, so red faced emoji, geez, I'll pray for you. Life is too short to be so angry at PTI. Then he had another tweet said, and way to go out on a limp. He meant limb, and pick the number one team in the country at home who's a huge favorite. How long did you watch film to come up with that surprise pick? 3 question marks. Really newsworthy, Captain Obvious. Laughing emoji, crying face at PTI.
Is it any coincidence that the 20-year anniversary of PTI has a 30 for 30 that just debuted last night on ESPN, and Mike Wilbon making a statement like this got the attention that maybe got them some extra viewership on that program too? You know what? Don't be so sensitive, Lane Kiffin, because you know what? Everybody goes through this. And the fact that Kevin Durant gets criticized for being the guy between burner accounts and the way he suddenly felt like, I shouldn't be scorned like this, but I am, and therefore I'm coming at you because you scorched the earth with me. You know what? You got better things to worry about, like the game itself and trying to actually show up and play well. Stop worrying about Mike Wilbon.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of funny more than anything else. Did you see this one, too, from the skillet? What do they call it? The Iron Skillet? The Battle for the Iron Skillet? SMU and TCU?
Oh,
SMU
went into
Fort Worth and beat them. Yeah. They did the flag, but also TCU coach Gary Patterson, unprompted suggestion that a player struck Jerry Kill with a helmet and gave Jerry Kill a concussion. You might remember Jerry Kill. He had to step down from being the head coach in Minnesota, had seizures, tons of health problems. SMU AD Rick Hart said the school found no evidence that an SMU player hit Kill. So you have TCU's coach Gary Patterson saying it happened. You have SMU's AD Rick Hart saying that it didn't happen. Nice little rivalry they have going on there in the Metroplex.
Yeah, conveniently it's in-state, and you can try and build on it, and you can resurrect a program that's on the way down in TCU and a program that's trying to get back up in SMU, and you can all do the same thing that they did when Baker Mayfield took a flag and tried to plant it in the field, too. Okay, been there, done that before. Someone will end up doing it inevitably again. The fact of the matter is, you don't need to do all that if you're SMU. You just got a really good win, and you won two straight games in the series, I believe, now, which no one would have seen coming. You don't need to do all that extra stuff. Just keep handling your business. That's the most important thing. The fact that we're still talking about it, I'm sure the universities love it because there's no bad publicity when you're talking about these things. But move on to the next game.
Oh, I love it. I love the rivalry. I love the bitterness of the rivalry. And I love the flag and the logo when
you're
you went
the
on
Joe
the road.
Kelly of this
I think
show.
It's great. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, the NBA response to the anti-vaxxers in the NBA. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. Doc Linville is awesome. And Doc Linville is the guy that is going to get you looking and feeling like your old, younger self again by giving you your hair back. And I said your hair because it is. How do I know? Because I did it. John Granato did it. Fred Fowler did it. I was next in line because I said, I talked to the guys. Is it worth it? Is it going to get me the results? They said, heck yeah, it is. You definitely should look into it. So I did. And after meeting with Doc Linville, I decided to do it. It's been a little over a week now, and you can see it's everything's starting to grow back in. They said, you're not going to find the full total results until the hair actually thickens and gets really, really firmly secured. But that could take 6 months to 9 months. But even so, in the short term, it looks so much better. It feels great. And I've got a ton more confidence knowing I'm getting my original hairline back or close to it. And it's because of Doc Linville. It's easy. I didn't feel any pain at all when they numbed up and did the procedure. The procedure doesn't take days and you're not in a hospital. It's an in and out patient procedure that takes about a half a day. It's not a hair plug. It's your own actual hair. They take hair from where you have a ton of it, and they put it where you don't have as much. It's called neo-grafting, and it's an interesting, interesting procedure. I asked tons of questions when I went through it, and the fact that I know exactly how the machines work, what they do, and how it's all put into a play just makes it more meaningful to me that I believe it's going to work. They tell you it's about a 90 to 95% success rate for the actual follicles they plant and redirect. Why wouldn't you at least explore the opportunities? 975hair.com is where you need to go. And because you're a loyal listener to ESPN, they're going to do a free consultation for you. It normally would cost $150. You can go in and meet with Doc Linville staff. They're going to tell you if they can help you, and if so, how much and how the whole process works. And it doesn't cost you a single thing. Then you go home, you can think about it. But if you decide to do it, you're going to the best. Because the ladies that did my procedure, they are the best. They're the ones that had started doing this across the country when it first became a thing. Now they're firmly planted here in Houston, Texas, working for Doc Linville, and they're doing that great work for people like you. Check them out today. Financing available. Minimal downtime. And I'm telling you, it's going to be worth it for you. I feel it's worth it for me. 975hair.com. Check out my good friend, Doc Linville.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.